When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hiya.
It's a big old week for video games. Modern Warfare came out. We've already done a nice little banter about that. But why not talk about the hottest thing in RPG gaming, The Outer Worlds?
Oh, sorry. I thought we were going to talk about Fallout 76.
Then. No, that's What's the opposite? It's the coldest?
No, it's the hottest because it's on fire.
It is a big old tire fire. And we will get to comparisons between Bethesda and Obsidian. But yeah, Outer Worlds is the newest game from Obsidian, the sort of the first new IP they've done in quite a long time. Obsidian, if you don't already know, is the was formed from the people that originally made the original Fallout, and it's a big old deal that they finally returned to what is ostensibly a better Fallout engine and a better Fallout framework. So I thought we'd just open, we're going to sort of compare and contrast various things, Outer Worlds, Fallout, Bethesda, whatever. But where are you guys on it in general? Jules, you did the review. Josh, you've been playing since Friday.
I honestly think
Are you having fun?
It's a fantastic game, and sure, there are a few flaws with it, which I highlighted in the video review, but I do feel that this, as an experience, has been one of the most enjoyable times that I've had playing a video game this year. I'd say that it ranks very highly up there with my time with Resident Evil 2 Remake. It's that good for me.
It is pretty pristine. I mean, I got it on this. It came out the same day as Modern Warfare, which is Modern Warfare has just dominated my entire being. But I've been going back on Outer Worlds, and I've put down a bunch of different sort of categories to like tip into or whatever. Dip into.
Yes.
You can
tip off the
tip your toe, tiptoe, small toes into pools of content. But
great
the whole
band.
Thing with this, I know there's various things I want to talk about. And I'm very excited. Josh, where were you in general?
I was looking forward to it because obviously me and Jules went down to London to play it before launch, and that got me excited for it. It's always been on the radar. I just kind of took it for granted that it was coming out, and I expected to like it. I didn't expect it to sort of love it as much as I actually have been because obviously I got Modern Warfare as well, and I expected to kind of split my time. But to be honest, every single time I jump onto The Outer Worlds, it grips me so much that I just, even though I'm loving Modern Warfare as well, I just can't put it down. Every night I've been playing it, I keep saying, you know, I'll go on and have, you know, 2 hours on Call of Duty at 8 o'clock, then it's 9:30, and I'm thinking I'll get on it at 10 o'clock, and then, you know, it's 11 o'clock and I want to go to bed. But it's been so good.
Yeah, we haven't had like two like stellar titles next to each other in a while, because I do that. I'm on Outer Worlds thinking I'll do a little bit more, then I'll go on Modern Warfare or vice versa, and an entire day passes and I haven't left that one game that I was on.
I think that Outer Worlds just scratches that itch though that a lot of people have been just, it's basically every single movement that they've done with games like Fallout 76 and other sort of RPGs titles, it's everyone's always just been like, yeah, but can we just take it a step back to where the dialogue, the writing was the central focus rather than the action and the spectacle. And I feel like a lot of comparisons are actually going to be made, not with Fallout, but we will obviously go into that, but it'll be with Borderlands 3, because they actually do cover the same material quite a lot. I mean, it's you and a resistance helping a load of corporations fight each other with a shadowy board sort of director.
Yeah, that's true.
And you've got over-the-top characters, you've got comedy, you've got space warfare. In fact, those are the two games that should be compared.
Oh, I'm with you in terms of thematics. Like, I think this is way better written than Borderlands 3 is.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
In terms of like framework, I guess. But
and that's not to say that Borderlands 3 is written badly. I'm just saying that there's a huge disparagence between the type of humor that is in there. You've got one that's, I'd say it's, I hate saying that it's clever because it makes me sound like it's like, oh, you need to be smart to understand Rick and Morty. But like, it's one of those things where it's more subtle. That's probably what I'd say, despite being very out there.
I think to touch on because I've written down like the importance of like dialogue and choice in games, and I think that's something that Obsidian definitely brought to Fallout. Like, a lot of people cite New Vegas as the best Fallout because even from the get-go you have all these different factions that are like vying for control of even the opening area and everything.
Sorry, I'm a little bit confused. You said you said nearly all of. Like, why is that not? It's this definitive answer. It's the best one. Fallout New Vegas is the best.
Well, yeah, you could. I mean, like I said, a lot of fans go with that. There'll be some people who like three. there might be
wrong'uns.
I mean, ain't anyone in this
says
room.
You, Mister. I love Fallout 4.
Exactly. I was going to say.
I'm flying under the radar here. I'm in disguise.
I love my old spoken protagonist. But yeah, so I think one of the things that Obsidian like highlight with New Vegas, the reason that a lot of people champion that game is that it feels so reactive to every single thing that you do, and I think that comes from the fact that they have a mute protagonist. They can just write more dialogue options for you that are only in text. And I guess they just record the reactions on behalf of the NPCs. But that stuff is the thing that I felt that was so missing from Fallout 4.
Yeah.
And I think that in Fallout 4, obviously, they went with a voice protagonist, and it meant that they had like things like the sarcasm button or things that had to relate to where your like mental state was at the time. I assume my character would be really stressed out at the beginning, but they weren't, and none of that stuff made sense.
Do you know what the thing is with that? The Fallout 4 had actually a relatively easy fix. All they had to do was have the spoken lines of dialogue actually just be shown and so you could read them before they were delivered. That's the best thing about it. Like when you get to choose what your character is saying, that's when you feel like you are choosing it. If you're just basically going in a general direction, just waft over to being angry, like, you know, then you'll just be like, you have no idea how angry they're going to be, what's the level of violence they're going to enact.
I would say if there's a word to pin it on, it's like it's agency. I didn't really feel like I had that much agency in Fallout 4, and I was ping-ponging between like the Minutemen quests or trying to search for my missing kid or whatever, whereas in this, like, it's more open-ended at the beginning. You just get dropped on Edgewater or whatever. Is it Terra 2, I think is the name of the planet?
Terra 2,
And so, like, you know, you have like way more free-form agency, but how have you guys found that, the difference between the two? And Josh, as you're a massive Fallout 4 fan.
Well, it's been interesting because most of my time in the Outer Worlds so far, I've played about 15 hours or so, has been spent in sort of conversation and just exploring. I haven't really done much combat until last night when I was exploring Monarch, which is actually the sliver of demo that we got to play in London. So it's been interesting to go back to a game like this where the conversations are so detailed and so dense. Like, I didn't expect it, even though I'd already played. I didn't expect to talk to every single person in a town and each proper NPC have so much to say. Even if it didn't result in quests, they had so much sort of personality to explore, and I thought that was really cool, and it is reactive as well. The way sort of they draw in your companions, that blew me away when I was first exploring Edgewater, and people would react depending on what you were wearing and who was in your party. I thought that was a cool little touch to give you that sense of agency and that your actions were having an effect on the world.
Like, your build matters.
Yeah, it wasn't just bringing quests in or, you know, making money and stuff or doing one extreme or the other. It was every sort of little change that you made, a little alteration that you performed that impacted how you were perceived in this world.
I don't know if you guys remember before Mass Effect came out, me and you, Jules, would have been about 40. I don't know if Josh was on the planet at that point.
Barely, you know.
Back in the day. But before Mass Effect, I remember when they were shown the dialogue system, and I remember just looking forward to being able to have conversations with NPCs with that level of like reaction. Like you said, you kind of preload your answer or whatever beforehand, so it lets the flow of a conversation happen. And I remember like loving that. I've not had as much fun just talking to people in a game since the Mass Effect trilogy, more so 1 and 2. I absolutely love that stuff.
I love the fact that they have found a way of blending. You've got your classic options. You've got your like good option. You've got your quest option, you know, get to the point sort of thing. But my favorite one is when they've just got like 3 or 4 superfluous bits of dialogue that won't add anything other than just a bit of flavor to your experience. Like, and there's even levels of gray, I would say, in these conversations that haven't been experienced not since the first like Fallout 1 and 2 when they were like isometric games.
Yeah.
Because it was like, that's the thing of like, you go up to somebody and you say you want to extort them. You've got almost like 2 or 3 options to try and get the money off of them. And I'm like, oh, that's cool, because now I feel like I can live this character. And I love like D&D and stuff like that. So it makes me feel like I can plan somebody's entire arc out, as it were.
Because it's like they tell you sometimes, like, oh, you know, like your intelligence stat is a certain level, or your leadership skill is a certain level, so you can persuade and lie and change things around that way. And they will tell you, like, it tells you what that unlockable, like, it'll have in brackets, like, oh, well, your persuade skill is 20, so you can do this thing. But apparently, like, depending on what your overall intelligence skill is, that dictates even the way your answers are phrased.
Yes.
So the lower it is, you make more jokes and you sound more stupid or whatever. But, like, if you have, like, a higher one, you can have, like, more philosophical conversations with people. You can have, like, someone like like the quest with Reed at the very beginning, you can bargain with him more, like you can try and talk to him on quote unquote his level, which I love that stuff. Like that's a level of, I don't know, dialogue depth that I wasn't really expecting, even though like you said, they pioneered it in the first place. But I just think in terms of like sheer agency in that world, I don't know, it depends how you'd split the gameplay. Do you think it's like there's more of a focus on the dialogue, the interactions, or the combat stuff?
The combat, I would say, overall, if we're being brutally honest, is probably the weakest part of the game. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, although you get so many different weapons and you can approach combat in different ways, combat is a situation where there is only one outcome, which is that the player survives because the game cannot continue if they die in combat. I find that I don't find combat itself in games as much fun as talking my way out of stuff, unless the combat itself is set up in a specific way where it's engineered to be like the most chaotic and fun.
And you can't like you can't make people surrender, or you can't alter a scenario once it's kicked off, I don't think.
Well, the best thing about it is that if your persuade skill is high enough and you shoot somebody with like a certain gun or whatever it is, you will make them cower.
Right.
And if they stay in that cower state and you finish off the final enemy, they will become like pacified, as in like they will just like stay in that state forever and they won't like attack you again.
Okay, that's closer to what I was thinking.
So that is like a way of doing it, but you still have to engage in combat. Mm-hmm. But then that leads me to the point about the level design, which is like there's some positives and negatives to talk about that. But one of the positives is that the way that the maps are laid out, they're fixed locations for enemy spawning, which means that you can take a trip off of the dirt road and actually find ways round enemies if you don't want to engage them. But the game is significantly harder because the XP you get from killing enemies is so much better. I feel like that's the only downside.
It's also weird as well because like once you notice where people are going to spawn, it is that same spot over and over again. And even if you've cleared that little location out, you can come back later and they're all back again.
Yeah. Which can be good, but I was exploring quite a lot of Monarch last night, and I was just sort of away from quests, just seeing what I could find. And it was quite cool to have those sort of, you know, little encampments pop up.
Yeah.
But there was an issue for me where I would go about 10 meters outside of the range and have to return, but then they'd spawn back again in like 2 minutes, which was a little bit frustrating. And I think combat in general is really satisfying.
I think
the
it's really
guns
snappy.
It's good.
Punchy and snappy and it's responsive. And I'm like really enjoying it. It is the weakest part, but I don't think it's necessarily, it's far from bad.
Oh, no.
It's only weak because everything else is so good.
I think it's just more basic when you get to sort of like those situations where enemies are respawning or you're just sort of I'm using the same tactics. I don't know about you guys, but I find it quite easy. I'm playing on normal. I kind of want to crank it up a little bit. I don't know whether I'm overleveled or what.
If you want a challenge, then try and go, what's your build at the moment that you're running?
To be honest, mostly like a charisma build.
Yeah, that's what I've gone for as well. I've gone for charisma and snipers is pretty much my build for that.
I'm assault rifle and I talk people out of things.
But then my other character is melee focused and no companions. And that is a challenge because that is actually
you and your hammer.
Like, using the sort of the dodge mechanic that you've got, you really have to get used to doing the time dilation, then dodging out of the way and then hitting as much as you can, then even like pegging it away and then jumping back into battle again. So there's a load of different ways to play in this game, but it is easy if you find the gun that you like and it's like a massively ranged 4x sniper, you just go bang, 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 then the companions deal the rest.
I've got a bit of that. Yeah.
I was using one of the light machine guns. I think it was the light machine gun Mark II that I'd leveled quite high, and I was walking through where there's a lot of manta queens. It's like a really deep, a big nest, and I was just sort of sitting there, you know, mowing them all
it's
down.
It's like the Predator, isn't it?
It felt satisfying, and I have fond memories of it, but at the same time, I'm kind of thinking, there could potentially be a bit more challenge here because I loved it when you first sort of get to Edgewater and you're just outside the town.
I think you're going to be talking about the same bit that I am.
Maybe. And you hear like the monsters in the distance and you sort of investigate and then you just get absolutely wrecked by them.
They kick your ass.
I had a weird thing at the beginning where deviated off away from the ship that you land in at the very, very beginning, and I went off and I found like a shotgun and like a couple of pistols and stuff. The shotgun was terrible, and even though it shouldn't have been, and it was like it was really low DPS once I actually went into the inventory, but I died to the first bunch of bandits over and over and over again because I was like, what the hell am I doing wrong? Am I missing something? Like, and my default modern day gaming brain just goes, is it a bug? Is it something that I'm not supposed to be doing? But whatever. And I eventually got through that and I ended up getting a more powerful pistol and whatever. But yeah, the combat, like, it is really light and snappy. I think it works. They've got their own version of VATS. It's called like time dilation. You press one of the shoulder buttons or whatever and you can just slow time in general, which is kind of how Fallout 4 did it, I guess. But I think it gives you enough of like a repertoire, like a suite of moves. And I love that you can dodge. That's something mm-hmm. that yeah. I always missed, or I do miss in more basic first-person shooters. Like, needs a little bit more to the ability set.
You can even level up one of the perks to allow you to do a forward dash as well. Yeah. Because on the other ones, you can go left, right, and behind. But once you get that one as well, you then get the option to like leap over enemies and like go around stuff. Yeah. A lot
we can bigger. Talk about map size as well, because map size and game length, because the game overall seems to be clocking in at about 25 to 30 hours. Obviously, yeah. managed to do it in about 12 to 15, I think he said. But that was based on like mainlining the main story and nothing else. I love that it's a lot shorter, because the thing that was initially put me off in the lead up to it was that it was going to be another 300, 400 hour mm-hmm. thing, and I was not going to get through all of it. The thing that they seem to have like nailed, or at least to me, is that they've got a shorter overall runtime, but it encourages replayability. There's so much depth to go back to and pick apart again.
As soon as I finished the main campaign, I went back and I started again, because mm-hmm. of the fact that I was just like, cool, I now feel freed of the, because I was obviously trying to get the review done under like a crunch time mm-hmm. thing. So getting that out of the way, I was suddenly like, oh, I can now play and explore and do all of the bits that I was really mm-hmm. interested in, like going and seeing what's in like this corner of the map or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like it's a very, very fun game. And I kind of am very anti people who are like, oh, what? It's only like 30 hours? Yeah. It's only 40 hours? It's kind of like, listen, I know that there are some games out there with the games as service model that require you to put in hundreds and hundreds of hours, but really, burrow down and ask yourself how much
does it engage you for that whole time?
Like what's the percentage of players that actually see it through to the end? I would much rather have a game that everyone completes and can agree is good uh-huh. rather than overstaying its welcome.
Plus, how insane is it that like 20 to 30 hours is too short?
Yeah.
When if we're being honest, if you went through like, I don't know, one of the Final Fantasy games, like if you were just going through the main quest lines, that would be a 30 hour game.
Yeah,
well, this is to me why it's perhaps more comparable to like BioWare games, because even though
I do have Mass Effect written down here.
Yeah, you look at the presentation of The Outer Worlds and the first-person shooter style and the way dialogue is handled, and all that screams Fallout. But when it comes to the structure of the quests and the map size and the way you navigate the maps, to me, that's way more Mass Effect, mm-hmm. where you're not just because you're going to different worlds and sort of landing mm-hmm. on them, but the way they're delivered, you're not spending hundreds of hours just randomly exploring. You can randomly explore, but more often than not, there's just a sort of smattering of, you know, encampments or buildings that you can check out, mm-hmm. and they're already there on the map. You just have to have a brief glance at them mm-hmm. to know where you need to go. You're not going to get lost, really. And to me, that does benefit this game, especially because, like you said, it encourages replayability and also just makes it more focused. Although,
I was going to say focus is something that I feel like I will say is missing,
it did make me appreciate Fallout 4 a bit more.
Oh, every
time.
When I
was
time.
Walking around, yeah. and you know, I did kind of crave that freeform sort of exploration. I wanted to be surprised a bit more than I had been so far, because it nails what it does.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors.
For me, I've been having a blast using a class on Video Game Design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But if you're fooled into sort of approaching it like a Fallout game, I think you might be slightly disappointed.
I think it depends how much you associate that freeform, almost aimlessness with Fallout. Like, there is a focus to Fallout if you really want it, but it's a handful of strands in amongst like a massive open world, and you can just get lost doing a million other things, which for me was always the big problem with 4, because it clashed with what that guy should have been doing and what that character should have been doing in terms of tracking down their infant. But yeah, in Outer Worlds, I applaud that they've focused it down. I think that level of focus gives it a drive and a pace that, like, for me, was missing in those other games.
Totally agree with you. But as I said in the review, there was a few instances where the level size actually was...
I was going to say
it was a detriment to it because of the fact that, like, you would be standing there, you'd have a quest giver who'd be like, I've not seen this scientist buddy in ages. Can you go check on him, please? And you're like, he's literally 100 meters down the road. I go out of the town, I walk along, and I'm like, what? The quest ends here? Like, you could have gone yourself. You could have looked over the ramparts and been like, all right, Ted, no. You are very dead.
That happens at the very beginning with when Zoe goes missing as well from the encampment. That's the one that's the fringe faction from Edgewater, where it's like, oh, she's gone missing. We haven't seen her for a while. She's and like, it's just down the road. Like, you can sort of use a scope, and she's right, she's down there. Like, it would have solved everything.
But it's not. It doesn't happen as much as you might think from us telling those stories. It's not like, but it is still engaging and it's great, but it's just, unfortunately, it just exacerbates the long load times that you get on, like, consoles. So
if you're, I thought they'd been all right.
They're okay. You guys are playing on pros. I played it on a base PS4 and I got it on PC as well, which is so much quicker and obviously looks so much better. But it's just, I know that there's going to be a huge swathe of the audience that is still playing on core versions the Xbox One and the PS4. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, they're probably going to be sitting there going like, whew, that's a lot of load screens.
I'm sick of this artwork by now. And I'll go on, Josh.
I want to ask you guys, because this is sort of, it just took a lot of getting used to, because although I was enjoying the dialogue, I found that you go to the Groundbreaker, which is the ship really early on, which kind of is like the Citadel from Mass Effect. Yeah. You get to explore and you get to talk to a lot of people. And I thought that was awesome. The amount of mythology you get from that sort of area, the amount of quests you're given is like so cool. But the pacing is kind of weird. I find myself going to a new town or going to a new area like that and talking for what feels like about 2 hours genuinely of game time, amassing all of these quests, then going out for a big 2 hour stint of combat and coming back and returning it. I know that might be on me for not doing a quest at a time.
That's what I would want to do.
But it feels more conducive to, you know, haul them all out at the same time and then call them all in. But that makes for a strange kind of pace where you can go entire sessions if you're going on late at night or something, where you're not really accomplishing much, quote unquote, but just sort of engaging with the game in a kind of, in a way I'm not used to. I'm not saying it's bad, it's just in a way that I'm not used to from like a game like even Fallout 4, which is more immediate. It might not be better, but there is a certain flow to that I think the Outer Worlds, at least so far, is kind of lacking, and I think that might be a hurdle for some people. Because although, sorry, Jill,
I'm just saying it's really nice. I like the way the Outer Worlds does it, because I do the exact same thing: go and just get all the quests I possibly can, and then go out and do them. Because then I feel like you just, if you treat these as levels rather than as a part of an open world, then it's like you're completing a level, you're doing all that, and that is, I can understand that mentality. But I totally get what you mean about having the story potentially doesn't have enough time to sit with you, because you're like, cool, thanks for that quest. What have you got?
Yeah.
What have you got?
And it sort of becomes, at least least for me, it's just a scenario where I'm sort of rushing around the one town, sort of drinking it all in one big gulp, and then kind of exhausting it when I bring all the quests back, yeah. Which, again, might be my fault, but I think the game sort of encourages that, because you can't go 2 minutes without seeing a new flashy thing in a new town or having someone run up to you. And if you don't interact with them now, you miss the sort of momentum of the moment. And it's just, it's not bad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a quirk that took a little while to get used to, and now that I have, I can appreciate it.
I wonder
it
if that's more, just like a total subjective, like a taste thing. Because I like that. Like in terms of like, if I'm living the life of this sort of like weird marauder, like in I don't know, whatever the hell I am overall, like, you know, I kind of want to nip into like a main hub. I want to kind of interact with like this big sort of nexus of humanity and everyone else. And then I want to go out and do some quests and come back. Like, to me, I guess that would be the nearest thing to an overarching repetitive gameplay loop that they have, being inside all the, or outside of all the different sort of dialogue choices that you have. But I love like how much you can just get lost in a certain town. Yeah. But it's weird because I kind of think of the game size as being like what Destiny tried to do. Like where Destiny had like six, well, five, whatever, how many different planets you could land on. Yeah. They were core planets, but it was like, here's like four townships or four little settlements. Yeah. And it represents like a whole planet. For me, that's a more intelligent choice in terms of them spending so much time in development only to get like a big, like an Ubisoft style massive nothing. Yeah. Know what you guys would rather prefer.
I would much rather have a smaller condensed thing than having just like hours of walking through just going, where am I going? Because there's nothing worse, I think, than when we go into these open world things and they go, hey, look, your mission is actually over the other side of the map.
2,000 meters away.
You're like, okay, cool. Off I go. Get in a car or a boat or whatever. And you go in there and you're like, oh, right, cool. Get there. 5 minutes of firefight and then drive all the way back. Yeah. And then you're kind of like, so what they've done is they've just cut out the middleman. So that's why it feels weird, because we're just so used to just being like, guess we just look at the scenery for a bit.
I think that's one of the worst lessons that some devs learned from the open world boom. It was like, oh, okay, so everything needs to be scattered. And it's like, well, yeah, kind of, but you need to make something in between.
I can't remember what video game it was, but there was one that allowed you, whenever you go to a quest giver, it actually like teleported you outside of the area. Like you held a, I can't remember what it was. It was like a shooter game, but like you could literally just hold down the button afterwards to accept the quest. And it would be like fast travel you to just outside. And then you just only have like a little bit to walk there.
I bet they
like,
go back and forth on that, because you would sacrifice the open world detail or something. I would take that.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, in Outer Worlds, the one time when I had anything remotely negative to say about it was at the very beginning when I ran all the way across the map. I talked with someone. Okay, well, your next goal is all the way back across again. Yeah. I did that three times in a row. It was just like doing a bunch of quests in a row. And I had this weird like boiling up feeling inside of me where I almost turned off. I was just like, oh God, I don't want this running around game. But it stops being that.
But did you then find out on the map you can literally just go hover over the checkpoint, and there's so many checkpoints that are in the map that actually allow you to fast travel to locations within there? And I was just like, oh, there you go then. So if I've just got a quest and I know where I'm going because I've already explored it, say like there's the secret lab that I was talking about earlier, like say that I know that I need to go back there again, I go, oh cool, I can just fast travel there. I don't have to walk all the way there.
I think in terms of, because you mentioned Mass Effect before as well, like the when you pick your squad mates when you leave the ship, that is identical to the Mass Effect squad mate thing from Mass Effect 2 and 3.
I love the companions in this game.
Yeah, so we can talk about companions and that sort of feel of like going on an adventure together. I guess it's another split, because in Fallout it's very much an isolated thing. You can have companions, they're awesome in Fallout 4.
Yeah.
But I tend to, if you think of it as a franchise, it tends to be you're the lone wanderer. It's like, you know, versus the world.
The marketing just heavily pushed the fact that it was like you and Dogmeat. Like that was all it was pushing. So when you first meet Dogmeat, you're just kind of like, oh, okay, cool, that's me for the rest of the game. Like, and he's arguably the best companion.
Mr. Valentine.
No, because he doesn't have to fucking run his mouth. he's not just there going like, oh, I think that's bad. I don't think you should do that. Oh, I don't think you should have that. And he's like, shut the hell up.
Yeah. As compared to Outer Worlds companions, which are thoroughly lovable. I mean, I've only met person who's Pavati, I think her name is, the first one.
Yeah, I am in love.
She's lovely. She reminds me of Kaylee from Firefly, like the
engine mechanic. I feel like they really drew heavily.
There's a lot of Firefly in Outer Worlds, which is the best possible thing for me. What are you going to say about companions?
First, Pavati should be protected at all costs. She is the absolute best. But yeah, it's sort of the Fallout sort of solo player thing got weird with 4 because they did double down on the companions so much. You had way more than ever before. They were way more integral to sort of the experience. You had companion quests. And to me, I always loved playing Fallout as a solo experience. Right. I left other things to sort of Mass Effect or whatever. But I thought 4 kind of pulled it round, and the Outer Worlds is a sort of continuation of that style. You're sort of going out, you're picking up these people, you're taking them back to your ship, they're having these dynamic conversations, they're engaging you in the same way that the companions did in 4, but in a much more nuanced and interesting way. And I actually care about these people and things that you come across. And for me, I haven't spent too much time with other people other than Ellie and the vicar and one other guy that you get. But I don't know whether they're all going to stand up. Sometimes I talk to them and I think, I'm done with you. Get back to the ship. You know, come on, get Parvati out again.
Right, Felix is the one that I feel like a load of people are really going to dislike.
Felix, yeah.
Right now, Felix is just a lovable man. He likes the toss ball game, so he comes with like one of the toss ball sticks as his weapon. Okay. Like he's hot-headed, he's very aggressive, and he's just very like happy-go-lucky. He's kind of like Mr. Peanut Butter from BoJack Horseman, but with a sort of killing mentality. Okay.
You can send him in.
Yeah, but he's but to be honest, I found myself giving him the most chance because I was like, right, I love how all of these other characters are written. What's your quirk? Why should I like you? And I stuck him in the team, and the reason that he becomes so like charming is because his outer world dialogue, as in when you're just running around and he's offering insight and stuff, is genuinely really funny.
Right.
Because he'll just be like talking about his favorite lineups in his sports teams. He'll be talking about trading cards when you pick him up. He'll be like, when he's in town, he's just kind of like, you want me to bash him? He's like, no, stop trying to bash people.
I do think, just to quickly mention about the comedy, I think that this is one of the funniest games I've played this generation. Yeah. And I love that they have the confidence to write jokes that are just in certain dialogue options that you might not even say.
Yeah.
But just the fact that you have, like, your character clearly thinks through a handful of different things. Oh, well, I can't say that, or I shouldn't say that. I'll do this instead. I just think it has a level of authorship that I think for me has been missing from all of Bethesda's games in Skyrim.
I think it's because it goes back to that sense of placement. One of the biggest problems that the Fallout series has had has been, like you say, the person usually wakes up, the event has happened, and they basically just slot right in. They just start picking up bottle caps, like they instantly knew that that was the currency that was
super mutant. Oh, super mutant, yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, they'd never freak out. The only character that made sense in the Fallout universe was the courier, because the courier existed and was part of that lifestyle before the amnesia accident. And then afterwards, it makes sense. Because
one of the many reasons why New Vegas tends to get regarded higher.
But Outer Worlds allows you, because of the fact that your character obviously came here on a spaceship, they know about all these things. The only time that they're like, what's going on, is like when the corporations come in and start doing other slogans. And then once you get that, you're just like, oh, I don't need to adjust anymore. This all makes sense.
I love its whole sort of like narrative framework of like this big capitalistic monopoly in the future of just like, you know, bodies are property, and like, you know, if someone dies or even if someone kills themselves, it's your next living relative, the person that was relative to your body when they die. And so the whole township has to pay for one person taking their own life. Just a horrific sort of extrapolation on a potentially capitalistic mentality. Yeah. But I love that they try and address that from both sides and be like, okay, the comfort blanket of living in that system and whatever.
And that's it. That's when that sort of humor and that nuance side comes in to great moral choices, because the first big one you get in Edgewater is choosing between two factions, essentially, and they both have the pros and cons. And for me, it was so difficult to make that choice about where to route the power, because I didn't know. I could see morally why one might be righter than the other, but I'd made friends in all of these communities, and that's why those quests, those side quests, are so important, I feel, and why it does pay off when you're taking them all on, you cash them all in, because you do talk to everyone, you get to know how these communities operate, you get to know the little quirks, and they might not all be good quirks, but you sort of become so familiar with them that it's hard to take them away, because that's all that these people know. These people are just trying to get by, living under this big, you know, essentially kind of like dictatorship thing. And you don't want to just like rip them out of that, because what's going to happen to them then? They can't just survive out in the wild.
I hope like that's what they wanted. Because that's, you're essentially playing an interloper who gets to sort of drop in this like privileged situation and affect a whole bunch of different mechanisms and environments and economies, and then just leave again.
Yeah.
And it's like, I hope that that's all embedded into what their intent was behind it, the feelings that you have, because it is so sporadic. But I would hope that that's all intentional.
Well, you say that, but there's obviously the your reputation level, and let's just say that if you piss off certain people by continually going in the face of the board, or in the face of like the rogue sort of pirate factions and stuff that you can meet, they will have stuff happen to other pockets of the university.
If
you go back to certain situations after you've gone off on a few missions and you've basically badmouthed them, like the board, for example, you can go to like board controlled areas, and they'll suddenly be like, very like, well, you're going to need a very high persuade check to let me forget like what you've been saying about it. And I'm like, well, luckily I've got 122 over the level cap, brother.
I kind of just felt like more of like sort of reflection on humanity in space. space. Yeah. Like you're dipping into all these different potential experiences. And we'll definitely do a part two on this podcast because we're still playing through it. Yeah. I know you're going back through another play and me and Josh are yet to finish it. So we can follow up on some more stuff. But right now, in terms of our general thoughts, we're super positive on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that Obsidian ever didn't. I was going to say a return to form. Obsidian are incredibly solid and they've been incredibly reliable over the years. But this is a phenomenal game.
Now, if I'm being perfectly honest, I feel like the failures of Bethesda with Fallout 76 recently have done nothing but drum up interest in the Outer Worlds, showing that it's an alternative without bugs, that is a flat payment system, and it's from developers that have spent years honing their craft trying to make it the best they can be. I would say, and this is just a question playing devil's advocate, would this game be received as well had it not been for that failure of Bethesda? Would it have not just been buried by Call of Duty Modern Warfare?
I personally don't think so at all, because I think Obsidian are a massive name in RPGs, and I don't play Fallout 76 and I don't care about it other than just laughing at it occasionally. And I don't think I think Fallout 76's fandom is so small. I still think this would have made waves, mainly because it isn't Call of Duty. Like, it is the other side of the coin if you want something more considered and less sort of multiplayer focused. So I would hope so. But I think that it is incredibly formulaic. Like, it is Fallout in space. It does it better, but it is. And I think that could be a potential negative. But Fallout 76 has provided the best marketing campaign in gaming history for this thing.
I've not been as excited to finish a game, go back to it, and then also say I would pay money for DLC for extra missions.
Plug some planets in.
Like, honestly, if they're going to go down the line and do the season pass like they did with all of the old Fallout games, I genuinely would be very keen on getting that.
What was the thing you were going to say?
Just that I think it's a mixture of both, because it is a quality title, but like you said, it's sort of formulaic, and I don't mean that in a kind of pejorative way. I mean that in a sort of, this feels like a game from 2011 or whatever, but done very well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, had we not had the failings of Bethesda or this huge gap in the market that just needed someone to step into and be like, hey, you remember all these systems you love? I'm doing them really well. You know, there's not much that's really going to push you what you expect. It's going to be a really great weekend. Mm-hmm. Come to us. I think that has benefited it a lot. Had these games not sort of fallen out of fashion or whatever, it might have struggled a bit more, but that's not the case. You know, this is the context it's releasing in, and it's making the most of the emptiness in that sort of
it's
genre.
Weird because, like, for as much as it is sticking to a formula and it is, like, you know, it is very it's very expected, but at the same time Nintendo have done that for like over 30 years and we always just call it traditional, and I'm just sort of like, well, why can't they just stick to a certain formula that works and let's call it traditional? This is a traditional open world, you know, immersive RPG, and these guys are the people who pioneered it in the first place.
I could never criticize a game for doing the same thing over and over when I bought as many copies of Dynasty Warriors as I have.
I knew that was coming. Yeah.
Yes, it's Dynasty Warriors. Dynasty Warriors.
I didn't even pick up on it for that time. But yeah, let us know anything down in the comments below if you're watching the video version of things, or come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Josh Brown.
Thank you. Goodbye.
I'll catch you next time. Bye.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.